For the past 15 or 20 years, at least, we've been talking almost nonstop about Dutch elm disease and how it is completely decimating elm trees, not only here in the United States, but worldwide as well. And now I get a press release, a news release across my desk that you're using money from the Minnesota Invasive Terrestrial Plants and Pests Center to study whether certain cultivars of elm trees are just naturally resistant. Tell me you've got good news on that front, that we are going to continue to see elm trees in the future.
Yes. So resistance in the natural populations of elm have been recognized for a long time. And so there have been breeding programs in the past that have looked at this. And so we are trying to capture that resistance that may occur out in the Minnesota landscape. And we have been finding resistance in some of those trees. And the issue can be where once you identify a large survivor elm that's out in the landscape, it's not clear just from looking at it, or we don't have a rapid test yet to tell if it truly does have resistance to Dutch elm disease. And so we propagate these trees clonally, so it's an exact genetic copy of that parent tree, and we plant them out, and we will take the pathogen itself and grow it, and we can inject it into the tree to inoculate it, thereby, you know, mimicking sort of what the beetles will do by feeding on it and getting that pathogen in the tree. And we can assess how well they will perform, whether they'll die from the pathogen, or they can resist that pathogen and recover and still grow.
That seems like a very slow process. How long does it take between the initial identification of a survivor elm and the point where you're able to inject that pathogen into a cloned tree?
That process can take anywhere from 5 to 8 years.
So it is a very slow process. When did you start?
We've been doing it for a number of years, over 10 years.
I guess my mind automatically goes to, if you know there are survivor trees just out in nature, and you have the ability to clone those survivor trees, why don't you just clone them and offer those trees out for the public to plant in their yards?
There's always the possibility that the trees happen to escape infection by the pathogen. So our process is actually scientifically proving that there's resistance by doing replicated inoculations.
And are you finding that there's some part of the DNA of the tree that is just naturally or over time has developed this resistance to Dutch elm disease?
We would love to be able to know a genetic marker for resistance, but nobody has been able to establish what that is yet.
We do have some indications, possibly how they're doing this from studies that we've done and others. And at least one mechanism we understand is that these resistant trees are able to wall off that pathogen better than other ones. And so, but the genetic underpinnings of what that is, isn't currently known.
The news release that I have indicates that three varieties of elm trees here in Minnesota, Valley Forge, Prairie Expedition, and Jefferson, seem to do better against Dutch elm disease than other varieties. Is that what you're finding as well?
We did recently do a study with those three cultivars. There are other cultivars that are resistant. Those just happen to be ones that we did a study with where we're doing different tests on inoculation methods and tree age. And so those performed very well, yes, but they're not the only ones that are available.
I'm familiar with emerald ash borer. That's a big deal here in central Minnesota. That bug burrows into the tree, lays its eggs, and then the larvae basically eat the tree from the inside out. Dutch elm disease, that's more of a fungal disease, right? That's a fungus, right?
Yes. Yep. So, and it's also vectored by a beetle. So it's an elm bark beetle that carries spores of the fungus. So if we didn't have that vector, this really wouldn't be a problem, because what happens, those beetles will go to a healthy tree carrying those spores of that fungus. And as they feed on the tree, it'll get into the vascular tissue of the tree. And so it can transport in these small tubes, and it will plug them up and basically will inhibit water being able to get transported in the tree. And so it's a wilt disease. And so, and then it progresses very rapidly in susceptible trees. It can also be transferred to trees through root grafts, but we really don't have that problem anymore because we don't have that many elms. Back when they lined the streets and boulevards, you'd have trees that were planted close together, and a diseased tree could transfer that pathogen through root grafts if they were planted in near proximity.
How long can the fungus survive outside of an elm tree? I mean, can we just chop down all the elm trees, wait 5 years and replant?
I guess it's going to be other places. That's not really known, to be honest. But these are is in a group of fungi. So it's Ophiostoma novaulmi is the name of the fungus. And so these are fungi that they'll grow in wood and sap wood of different trees. So it'll probably be around somewhere else. So it's it wouldn't be as a real feasible alternative.
What is your role in this study? What do you do every day?
This is a great cooperation between the Department of Plant Pathology, myself in the Blanchett lab, and also Ryan, who's in forestry. And so I typically work more on the pathology side, so the inoculations and dealing with the pathogen. And we work jointly on looking at what trees to identify to clone. And so basically it's on that side, and Ryan can talk about more of the horticultural side of that.
Hey, Ryan, what role do you play in this study?
So my main role is going out and collecting scion material from survivor trees.
What's scion material?
So that's the vegetative branch tips, or it's the part of the tree that we put onto a rootstock when we graft. So clonal vegetative material. So I go out and find these trees, take cuttings from the trees, bring them back to the greenhouse, propagate them in the greenhouse, grow them up, and then get them out into our test plots. And then I also help just manage the fields and making sure the grass gets mowed and the trees get pruned, that sort of stuff.
Now, how many naturally disease-resistant trees are you finding on an average, say, month?
It's very, very few, very low percentages. Ben, do you know the statistic about what percent of naturally occurring resistance exists? Isn't it like 1 in 10,000 or?
Don't quote that number, but it's something to that effect. It's very low.
So Ryan, part of your job is searching out naturally resistant elm trees, and then you get the part of the tree that you're going to graft on, and then your job is to propagate. Ben, when do you take over the study? Do you get the propagated trees? Do you take samples from the propagated trees into the lab? Where's the connection?
Yep. So basically we plant them out in the field, and we want an age that's appropriate. So they're growing 5 to 6 years in the field. And so then I will grow up that fungus, the pathogen itself, and we put in a known quantity of the fungus into the tree by drilling a hole, and we will inject a certain amount into the tree, and then we'll assess the tree and give it ratings, for months after, until in that current growing year and the following growing year, to assess how it's surviving.
Where are these tree farms located?
So our research plot is on the University of Minnesota St. Paul campus. So we've got about 7 acres planted in the various elm varieties that we have. And Jeff, maybe just to circle back to your previous question, at this time when we're starting to do planting back in the natural areas with varieties or cultivars that we've seen survive that are native to Minnesota, we work with about 5, which includes St. Croix American Elm, which is a commercially available Minnesota survivor elm that's propagated and sold in the nursery trade. But so far, we've identified just a handful that that can survive inoculation.
The preliminary research, is it available anywhere so that if someone is looking for trees, say, in their yard, and they're interested in elms, want to make sure they put the right variety in, is that information available anywhere?
There will be. There shouldn't be any non-resistant elms being sold at commercial nurseries. So if you go to a reputable nursery, you should be getting good resistant stock. University of Minnesota Extension does have a webpage on resistant elms. And on that page, there's a list of the available cultivars, which also include non-native species of elm or hybrid elm.
So there are available resistant elm species already available commercially. The job that you two are heading up is to try to isolate the pathogen, understand how the pathogen affects the tree, and then in the future be able to inoculate other varieties of elms. Have I kind of got that right in my head?
I'll let Ben touch on the resistance mechanisms, but I would say broadly the goal is to continue to expand the palette of available resistant varieties that can be used either in the commercial nursery trade or for reforestation efforts.
And the reason for that is too, so when the pathogen first came to the United States in around 1930, it was one species of the pathogen. In the 70s and 80s, there was another hybridization that had occurred in Europe. And so it was a much more virulent strain that was spreading in the 70s and 80s. And it was basically a second wave. And it was much more virulent. And so, that can still happen. And not understanding exactly what these mechanisms are in these different trees and if these different selections of resistant trees may have different mechanisms or levels of that mechanism, we want to make sure that we have a broad genetic background for these resistant elms that are out there as the pathogen may continue to change. And so that's an important aspect too, as well as different horticultural characteristics of these trees. Their form can be very different, their growth rate, their textures of their leaves, all these different things too, and how well they're able to be propagated is another issue, which is important for the commercial industry. And one other thing we didn't touch on either is the other part of our project too, is doing plantings and getting some of this resistant genetics out in the landscape, because a lot of times people think of elm as primarily an urban species, which it has been incredibly a good choice because it is very tolerant of compaction and salt and drought and all these other characteristics that you might find in urban environments. But it's also historically is a dominant species in floodplains. And as we're losing ash in some of these similar environments, we're trying to conduct these plantings that to get these trees out there is an important part of the forest ecosystem as well. Yeah, the American elm is an iconic tree. I mean, there's lots of history with that in the past, with historical things being done underneath large American elm, and their shape and their stature in the landscape is really unmatched. And so there really is a love of elm, I think, by Minnesotans and people across the country, really, where elm grow. And it's a great selection, a great tree species to be planting in these urban environments for shade, for their beauty. And so we think it's important to keep this going and to keep it part of the Minnesota landscape.